Half of the nation's shipyards are this close to out of business. Assistant Secretary of the Navy Sean Stackley tells the Senate Armed Services Subcommittee on Sea Power, out of 8 shipyards in the United States, half are one contract away from being what he calls not viable. Brian Clark is senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments and looking at the health of the maritime contracting industry. And Brian, also a former special assistant to the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Jonathan Greener. Brian, it's terrific to have you on the program. I confess, hearing this testimony and then reading the lack of media coverage about it caused me to think maybe I've read it wrong, because when I hear Secretary Stackley say something like that, I think this is a red alert and this is a big deal. And apparently, not everybody agreed with me. Are you on? Do you agree that this is a crisis situation, or is this something that's been known for a long time? Thanks for being on, Brian.
Well, thank you for having me on, Francis. It's great to talk to you again. The situation that we're in right now with the Navy's, rather the industrial base for shipbuilding, has been like this for a while, because what's happened over the years as the Navy's gotten smaller since the 600-ship Navy days of the 80s when President Reagan worked toward that goal, we've been shrinking the Navy, and now it's down to about 280 ships. So in the course of that, the shipbuilding industry has had to downsize significantly. And what's happened is because different ship types require such specialized skills and equipment to be able to build them, that the shipyards that we have today to build military ships have specialized to an enormous degree. So you've got shipyards that build only nuclear-powered submarines. You've got shipyards that build only amphibious ships, or that they build amphibious ships mostly. And you've got a shipyard out at NASSCO in San Diego that builds primarily auxiliary ships. So they've all specialized to a large degree. And what that means, though, is that they're building that one kind of ship. And as Secretary Stack said, if that type of ship's contract doesn't get renewed, or they don't buy a next generation of it, then that shipyard's in kind of dire straits, because they don't have a diversified customer base.
So the result of this has been a technique called bundling, and Sidney Friedberg writes about this in Breaking Defense. He refers to it as a bizarre bundling of contracts. What's that mean, and how does it work, Brian?
So what's happening is, if you have an industry where everybody's specialized to a large degree, then as the customer, the government, you don't have the ability to get a lot of competition, because if I'm going to buy a submarine, then I'm left to only buy it from the submarine builder, or if I'm buying an amphibious ship, I have to go to the company that builds those. So what the Navy's been trying to do is at least have 2 shipyards that build each kind of ship. Amphibious ships are the one kind of ship where that's not the case. The only shipyard that builds them today is Heinz Engel Shipyard down in Pascagoula, Mississippi. So what the Navy has done here is try to inject some competition by offering the next generation amphibious ship and the next generation oiler together as a package to the ship building industry. And they've asked both NASSCO, who builds auxiliary ships, oilers today, and Huntington Ingalls, who builds amphibious ships, to both bid on the package. And they're going to split up the workload in the package between those 2 shipyards in a way that allows them both to stay in business, but allows them both to compete on it so that they can drive down prices, hopefully, and get better deals for the government. So the Navy's had to go and have some innovative approaches to generate competition in an environment where normally you would only have one supplier that you were able to go to.
So I don't mean the phrase that I'm about to use in a negative or conspiratorial way, but it sounds like the contract, the bundle's going to be written in such a way that we know the outcome or the answer ahead of time.
So I was thinking that too. And so last week I went out to NASSCO, which is in San Diego, to visit that shipyard and talk with the people there about what their plans were to compete for the amphibious ship. That's not something they build today, but you know, the Navy is hoping to give them the opportunity to compete on it or to propose for it. And they showed me a great case for how they are more than capable of building this next generation amphibious ship. You know, they've ramped up their capabilities. They have an agreement and a partnership with Daewoo, which is a shipbuilder in Korea, to learn a lot about how they use how they do shipbuilding. And they've really developed the ability to build that kind of ship. So they can compete with Huntington Ingalls and give the Navy hopefully a better deal than they would otherwise get if they only had one supplier they could go to. So originally, I think a lot of people expected that this bundle that the Navy was proposing was going to just result in the same division of labor that we've always had, where one company builds the oilers, the other builds the amphibious ships, and it stays the way it always has been. But I think there's an opportunity here for the Navy to actually mix things up a little bit and get a new company involved in amphibious shipbuilding, which is good for competition, and then get a new ship and a new company involved in auxiliary shipbuilding, which again is a good idea from a competitive standpoint.
Well, yes, except to the point where when Secretary Stackley says NASSCO is a contract away, and also Ingalls' shipyard in Mississippi. If Ingalls does not get one of those two major programs, they're at risk.
Right, and the way they've written the proposal is that each company is going to get one of the products being bid. So you have the TAOX, which is the name of it, but it's the new oiler. And then you've got this new amphibious ship, the LHA-8, which is an amphibious assault ship. They're both big contracts. And so the Navy's going to give one of those to one shipyard and the other one to the other shipyard. So both shipyards are going to have a workload, so they're going to be able to stay going. But both shipyards can compete for either one of them. So it gets the opportunity for both shipyards to compete for a new kind of ship that they have not previously built.
And this strikes me as a primary example. And again, I don't mean any of this in a negative way, although I can see where somebody, maybe some members of Congress that have yet to voice any kind of opinions or objections might believe this is a negative thing. But what it seems like this is to me is this is the effort that first Deputy Secretary Lynn and then Deputy Secretary Carter, now Secretary Carter, and then Deputy Secretary Work have all talked about shaping and maintaining the health of the defense industrial base. Is this an example of that, Brian?
Yes, exactly. Because if you go for a highly competitive environment where it can be winner take all, what we could end up with is two or three shipyards building all the Navy's ships.
Yep.
Which eventually would result in a very non-competitive environment, because once the shipyards that didn't get the bid go out of business, now whoever won is going to be able to set the price going forward. So the Navy has to walk a fine line by sustaining a larger number of shipyards in business than you might normally need in the interest of maintaining the ability to compete for future classes of ships. So competition requires there to be enough players that you're able to get competitive advantage or competitive pricing. What it also is trying to do is sustain the industrial base so that there's a reserve capacity, because it may be 10 years from now, who knows, the security environment may be such that the Navy needs to ramp up production. We may need to get to a much larger Navy, and unless you have those shipyards already in place, you're not going to be able to do that ramp up very easily. A ship is a long-term capital investment. They take 2 to 5 years to build, and building a shipyard to be able to construct military ships would take several years just in and of itself.
Brian Clark is senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, traveling recently to investigate the health and sustainability of the defense industrial base, particularly regarding shipbuilding for the United States Navy. The trip that you took to talk to the folks at NASSCO and to see the operations in San Diego, what else were your takeaways from that trip, Brian?
Well, I was very impressed with the work that NASSCO is doing to incorporate some of the technologies and the approaches that the foreign commercial shipbuilding industry uses to build a large number of ships at a low price and apply those to U.S. military shipbuilding. So they've gone to Daewoo, who builds 100 ships a year at their shipyards in Korea, and taken those back to apply some of those techniques to how they build ships in San Diego. And they only build, 5 or 6 ships a year down there. But you can still get some of the same automation and production efficiencies that you can get the much larger shipyards down there. So they've really done a lot of work to improve speed and the cost effectiveness of their shipbuilding process. Now, by the same token, I visited HII's shipyard in Newport News a couple weeks ago as part of the same investigation, and found that they're doing a lot of the same things. They build aircraft carriers down there, so they build the largest, most complex ships that you can imagine. And they're applying some of those same commercial techniques there to building a much even larger ship, where new and modular construction is very difficult, because if in a ship that's 1,000 1,000 feet long and weighing about 100,000 tons, each module is huge. And so just building the capacity to build a big module and move it around like you were on an assembly line, that's really difficult. But they've done it for some of those modules on that ship. So going forward, the Ford-class carriers that they're building now, the Ford had a lot of issues with regard to cost and schedule delays. But the Kennedy, which is the John F. Kennedy, which is the next aircraft carrier, is going to incorporate a lot of efficiencies that they've built in to try to speed up the shipbuilding process. And when you speed it up, you save money.
So these efficiencies and innovations that the shipbuilders are learning from other countries are great, provided the Navy has the ability and willingness to work them into the design and requirements process. And you told me recently that there's one designer for all of the ships that are built for the United States Navy. Are they in on this? And is the Navy in on this so that those techniques can be incorporated? Because it's my sense, and maybe I'm not correct, please correct me if I'm not, that once the requirements are built and once the design is built, doesn't matter what the shipbuilder knows to be able to incorporate, he's stuck with the design he's got.
Yeah, so what we've got is Navy uses a naval architect, Gibson Cox, to do the initial designs for a lot of its ships. But cases where that's not true are submarines, which get designed by Electric Boat in concert with HII because they build the submarines, and so it's sort of a unique skill set. So they do the design work their own. And auxiliary ships, which NASSCO designs because NASSCO has been the only company to build them for the U.S. Navy for many years now. So in that case, the designer can incorporate affordability features into the design of the ship. So when NASSCO designs an auxiliary ship, they build into the design factors that are going to make it easier to build down the road because they know exactly how they plan to build it. Electric Boat up in Groton, which does the same thing with submarines, is able to do the same kind of thing with regard to incorporating production efficiencies into the design of the ship itself. So there's opportunities as we go forward to take advantage of that by looking at, for example, this next amphibious assault ship that's currently getting ready to be bid out, the one that the Navy's getting ready to bundle into this package, because the shipbuilders are going to be given the opportunity to come back with proposals for alterations of the design of that next ship that make it cheaper and easier to build. And I know that both companies that are going to bid on it have ideas that they're incorporating into their proposal for how the Navy could change the design of the ship to make it less expensive to build. But this is, like you're mentioning, this is a fundamental thing that the Navy's going to have to work through, is not give the shipbuilder a design that is so complete at the time they bid out for construction, that the shipbuilder doesn't have an opportunity to adjust it to reduce the cost of the ship. They have to incorporate what we call design for affordability. So shipbuilders have to be given an opportunity to propose alterations of the design early enough that they can be incorporated into the design and allow the ship to be built more cheaply. Because without doing that, we're never going to be able to do what they call bending the cost curve, which is reducing the cost of a ship.